When he and Vijay stepped out of the airlock, they saw another couple striding forcefully toward the hatch, one of them trailing a hair-thin wire from the collar rim of her suit. Once they got close enough to recognize their faces, Jamie said hello to Doreen McManus and Carter Carlton. Neither of them replied. They walked past Jamie and Vijay without a word, without a nod. Turning to his wife, Jamie said, "Carter looks pissed." Vijay watched them step into the airlock and close its outer hatch.
"You mean angry?"
Jamie nodded.
"In Oz, pissed means drunk."
"He's not drunk," Jamie said. "He's sore as a guy who fell into a clump of cactus." Vijay snickered.
"In Australia, we'd say he's mad as a frilled lizard."
"Colloquialisms," said Jamie.
"That's a $10 word," she said. "I'm impressed."
"Come on," he said, tugging at her wrist. "Let's see the sunset." They walked, hand in gloved hand, away from the airlock hatch, out onto the rock-strewn floor of the valley. The sun was just touching the uneven horizon. The cloudless sky was a deep butterscotch color, although behind them it had already darkened so much that the first stars were visible. "Dr. Waterman," Jamie heard in his headset, "please remember to stay within camera range." Jamie nodded inside his inflated bubble helmet. "We're not going that far," he replied to the safety monitor. Vijay looked down at the dusty ground, stamped with boot prints and the tracks of wheeled vehicles.
"Not like the old days anymore," she said. "I remember when you could actually step where no one had stood before."
Jamie replied, "You still can, but you've got to go a lot farther."
"We've never been to the other side of the valley, have we?" she asked.
"Not yet."
"Do you intend to go there?"
"Sooner or later," he said. "Right now we're concentrating on tracing the fossil river that ran along the valley floor."
"Think you'll find more villages?"
"That's the hope." Then Jamie added, "Chang wants to send a team to the South Pole and study its melting firsthand."
"That's a long ways off," said Vijay.
Nodding, Jamie went on, "The ice cap has lots of frozen carbon dioxide in it. The CO2 doesn't melt, it sublimes, goes straight from solid to gaseous carbon dioxide."
"Greenhouse gas?"
"Right. Mars is undergoing global warming, just like Earth." Vijay laughed.
"Maybe the temperature will get above freezing one of these days."
Looking across the broad, barren valley floor, Jamie said, "Maybe it'll get warm enough to melt the permafrost. Maybe this desert will bloom again eventually."
"In a million years?"
"More like 10 million, I'd guess." Vijay fell silent for a few moments as they walked slowly away from the dome. Then she asked,
"Will we be able to stay? I mean, from what Dex says about finances..."
Her voice trailed off. "We'll have to stretch the available money. We certainly can't afford to send a team to the South Pole, or even the other side of the valley. We've got to make this base as self-sufficient as we can and cut down on the number of resupply trips."
"Will that be enough, Jamie?"
Grimly, he answered, "It'll have to be." They walked a few paces farther. Then Jamie stopped and slipped his arm around Vijay's waist. The sun was halfway down the horizon, the sky already a deep violet.
"Couldn't cuddle in the hot suits," Vijay murmured.
With a chuckle, Jamie replied, "True, but you could squeeze two people into one of the larger sizes."
"Really?"
"So I've been told." Vijay thought about it for a moment.
"Criminy, that'd be worse than doing it in an airliner's lavatory, wouldn't it?"
"Romance at its most poetic."
"There goes the sun."
The last spot of brightness winked out. There was only a moment of twilight. Then the sky turned inky dark, spattered with brilliant stars. "And if we're lucky..." Jamie held his breath. Vijay leaned closer to him as they watched the stars, bright, solemn, hardly twinkling at all.
"There it is!" she cried. Jamie felt the breath gush out of him.
Overhead, the sky shimmered with delicate sheets of pale green, pink, ghostly white, curtains of the aurora that flickered like candlelight high above them. "The sky dancers," Jamie whispered. For several minutes, the two of them stood transfixed on the arid, dusty floor of the tremendous valley, staring up at the aurora that weaved and coiled above them. Jamie knew that almost every sunset on Mars, the aurora flared as high-energy subatomic particles from the solar wind impinged on the inert neon, xenon, and other noble gases in the Martian atmosphere. But the Navajo part of his mind recalled the sky dancers on Earth, in the desert scrubland of New Mexico, the night that Grandfather Al died. "They're watching over us," he thought. "We're not alone." "It's fading," BJ sighed.
"It only lasts while we're in darkness and the high atmosphere is still in sunlight," Jamie said, knowing that the sky dancers had other places to go, other eyes to delight, other omens to warn of.
"Look!" A meteor trail streaked across the deep violet sky like a fiery finger tracing a path through the heavens.
"Wow," Jamie managed to say before the meteor's blazing track winked out. "That was a big one."
"Should we make a wish?"
"Yeah, wish that we don't get hit by a meteor shower," Jamie said, remembering the shower that peppered the dome of the first expedition. One of the tiny stones had even hit his helmet. Remembering how close he'd come to death, Jamie suddenly felt very vulnerable in the flimsy nanosuit. "We'd better get inside," he said to VJ. The safety monitor reinforced the notion. "Dr. Waterman, temperature's dropping rapidly." "Right," he said crisply. "We're coming in." As they trudged back toward the lights of the dome and the airlock hatch, VJ said,
"That was spectacular, Jamie."
He looked at her, but it was already too dark to make out her beautiful face. Smiling ruefully, Jamie said, "Mars is a beautiful world, but it can be dangerous."
"You don't want to leave, do you?"
"Hell no," said Jamie.
Boston. Video studio. Monsignor DiNardo sat in the barber's chair while the makeup specialist smoothed the creamy lotion over his stubborn shadow of a beard.
"Italians," the young woman muttered, more to herself than the priest. "All that testosterone."
She was blonde and blousy. It was hard for DiNardo to tell her age, what with the cosmetic and rejuvenation treatments available. DiNardo looked at the big wall mirror in front of him. His chin and jaw looked baby pink, although his shaved scalp still showed a trace of stubble.
"All my life my beard has given me difficulty," he said. "I'm sorry if it's making your work too hard."
"Oh, that's all right, Father," she said, suddenly embarrassed. "It's my job, after all."
"You are a Catholic?"
"Born to it," she said, turning to the rows of bottles and jars on the counter.
"Irish?" he guessed.
"Nope.
Italian, just like you."
"Ah, che paese?"
"Huh?
What part of Italy do you come from?"
"Oh, my family's been here for 100 years, more. I went to Italy once, though, to Rome and Florence."
"Did you enjoy it?"
She broke into a major grin.
"I never had it so good. Guys were after me everywhere I went."
"Of course. Blonde and buxom," DiNardo thought.
"Boy, did I have impure thoughts on that trip."
DiNardo laughed.
"I could hear your confession, if you wish."
She laughed, too.
"I go every week at my parish church, Father."
"Good."
She studied his face for several moments.
"I think we're finished. You look fine."
Glancing into the mirror again, DiNardo thought he looked much as he always looked. His jaw was smooth and pinkish, but his eyes still drooped and had those bags beneath them. He started to get out of the chair, but the makeup woman put a hand on his shoulder.
"Father, could I ask you something?"
"Certainly," he said.
Her brows knit slightly.
"I've been watching them film you in the studio. What you said about the Martians, is that real?"
"Of course."
"There really were living people on Mars, just like us?"
DiNardo nodded.
"We don't know what they looked like, as yet. But they left buildings. They had a form of writing. They existed millions of years ago."
"But I saw this show on TV. The guy there says it's all a fake. He wrote a book about it, and he said that the scientists have faked the whole thing just to get more money out of us."
"I am a scientist," he said gently. The woman looked stricken.
"Oh, I didn't mean you, Father. Those other scientists, the secular ones, the ones who are atheists and hate religion, they'd do anything to tear down our beliefs."
"I don't believe so," DiNardo said.
I know many of them, and they are as honest as you and